Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. Once again, as usual, I am your host, Dan Seip. Additionally, I'm the branch manager here at Serving Those Who Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and thank you once again for your service. You simply do not hear that enough, but you're going to hear it here. I don't think we've said this in the previous couple of podcasts of the last couple of months. Ed and I are working remotely, as I'm sure you are listening remotely, so you can probably tell. You might hear a phone ring in the background or something like that. We will do our best to keep that down. We are back again, continuing remotely with the guru, the incomparable Ed Zirndorfer, as part of a mission to reach, teach, and serve you. And I want to point out, and I touched on it last podcast, that we are on the home stretch of expanding that capability. Obviously, it is not safe for us to meet as we have done. Many of you have gotten used to coming to the seminars that we offer every month on a live basis. We know we can't do that. So Ed has been working diligently with us, and we have virtual offerings that will be up within about a week or so. So literally, you will have Ed anywhere, virtually, of course. So stay tuned. At the outset, I need to say the opinions of our guest, Ed Zirndorfer, are not the opinions of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve. This podcast is presented for information only and should not be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. Recently, Ed has written two articles for us in the Fed Zone, which you can find at blog.stwserve.com or fed-zone.com, discussing Social Security benefits, and that's always a hot topic. Everybody's got questions, everybody's got thoughts, and still a lot of misconceptions because we've had changes to how people can claim and things like that pretty much since 2015 popping up. So we're going to be digging through a whole lot of that. Ed, you know, one of the things that you get to fairly early in your article is the earliest people can begin to receive Social Security benefits is at 62. And I wanted to pull that forward a little bit because to me, in my mind, that's a little bit like minimum retirement age for feds. You know, yes, you can, but there may be a price associated with it. And you did a good job of stressing that there's a bit more to the story because 62 is actually before a person's full retirement age or FRA. So why don't we jump on that part because that's the one I hear the most, and then we'll take a backward step and go through some of the nuts and bolts. So why don't you walk folks through FRA, as well as what the real impact of claiming early at 62 might be.
Okay, Dan, let's just go through some of the basics when an individual can claim his or her, and this is their retirement benefit. Social Security also has disability benefits, but today we're talking about a retirement benefit, mm-hmm. which an individual is eligible to receive if the individual is what is called fully insured. Fully insured meaning they have accumulated at least 40 credits of Social Security. Once an individual has accumulated his or her 40 credits, they're eligible to receive their retirement check, but they can't get it right away. They have to wait until at least age 62. Age 62 is the earliest individual can start drawing their mm-hmm. own Social Security retirement benefit. If they take it at 62, however, their Social Security retirement benefit will be permanently reduced. They're going to have a permanent reduction for the rest of their life. When can they get a full Social Security retirement check? They can get a full Social Security retirement check if they start receiving their Social Security at what is called their full retirement age. What is full retirement age? I know what everyone's thinking. Oh, it has to be 65. Well, that's true, but Congress in 1983 raised the full retirement age because we're living longer. Mm-hmm. So if you were born before 1938, yes, your full retirement age is 65. But if you were born after 1937, then your full retirement age is something between age 65 and age 67. So let's do an example here. Let's say you were born between 1943 and 1954. I happen to be born in 1951, so my full retirement age is 66. Dan, I think you were born in 1956.
That is correct.
So your full retirement age is a little bit later. It's 66 years and 4 months. My wife happened to be born in 1955, so her full retirement age is 66 years and 2 months.
Okay.
Essentially, the full retirement age has been going up by 2 months, starting for people born after, as I say, after 1937, and the latest it goes up to is age 67. Anybody born after 1959, their full retirement age is 67. So let's say you were born in 1970. You're 50 years old this year, but your full retirement age is 67. But the earliest you can receive that Social Security check is still age 62, no matter what year you were born.
Okay. And as you touch on, and we'll dig into this a bit further, just remember, folks, 62 is the earliest, but that means it's before full retirement age for most people, so you're going to be accepting a lesser benefit. Okay, so Ed, let's take a step back, hit some of the basics. So you touched on it about the 40 quarters, you know, or getting one credit for each quarter. So let's get right down to the basics of how someone earns that Social Security benefit over the work years, because you have a figure of 56-40 in there. So why don't you talk through the nuts and bolts of that part, getting to the 40 quarters?
Okay, so an individual is working during their life. They may start working, let's say, in their late teens, and they let's say they work until their late 50s or early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they were in the military. While they were working, they were paying into Social Security. Most people do, that we're talking about jobs covered by Social Security, and most jobs are covered by Social Security. There are some jobs that are not covered by Social Security. A classic example is if you are a federal worker and you're covered by the old retirement system, the Civil Service retirement system, you did not pay into Social Security. There are many states, I'll give you an example, Ohio, Texas, California, in which state workers did not pay into Social Security with their state in their state pension. There are some cities around the country in which city workers did not pay into Social Security. When I say state or city workers, we're talking about police officers, firefighters, teachers, or public service employees, and they were covered by a public pension in which they did not pay into Social Security. So these individuals didn't pay into Social Security. Now they may have earned, these individuals may have earned their Social Security credits in other ways. We can talk about that later. But as far as federal employees are concerned, CSRS employees have not paid into Social Security. I was a CSRS employee for 32 years, didn't put a dime into Social Security while I was a CSRS employee. Other federal employees, such as FERS employees, those employees who are covered by the newer retirement system, Federal Employees Retirement System, or FERS, they do pay into Social Security. So as you're working and you're covered by Social Security, when you are working and you're being paid, and you're covered by Social Security, the Social Security or FICA tax is being withheld from your paycheck. And how much is that? 6.2% of your gross pay is being deducted and going into the Social Security Retirement Trust Fund. And that's 6.2%. And now it's been that way for about 27 years. It was a little less earlier, before 1993. Earns you credits as you're working. That 6.2% you're paying now is matched by your employer. So if you're a FERS employee, you're putting in 6.2%, and your agency's matching that. You get one credit if you earn a certain amount of wages, and if you earn four times that amount of wages in a given year, you get your maximum four credits. So let's be very specific for 2020. Let's say you're a FERS employee, and you're earning this year, let's say, the first week of January. Let's go back to January 2020. And you earn, during the week of January, the first week of January, $1,410.
Yep.
You that was that resulted in you're getting your first credit of Social Security for the year 2020. In the second week, you earned another $1,410. That gives you your second credit. And then, let's say there are 4 weeks in January, you earn a total of $5,640. That's four times 1,410. You got your maximum four credits for the year. So somebody said, well, that means I'm done as far as Social Security is concerned. Yeah, they still take out the Social Security tax for the rest of the year. You're not done paying the Social Security tax. There is a so-called maximum wage base that your wages are subject to. So somebody earning in 2020 $137,700 or more, once they reach $137,700, your employer stops taking out the Social Security tax for this year. Will start up again next January when the wage base will be raised. But the point is, Dan, that the most credits you can earn in a given year is four.
Gotcha.
So to get your minimum 40 credits to earn your retirement benefit, you'd have to work a minimum 10 years in Social Security covered employment. And once you have those 40 credits, you are now eligible for a retirement benefit starting as early as age 62. But don't get me wrong. The 40 credits is only the minimum.
Right.
40 credits will only get you a minimum benefit. The more you pay into the system, Dan, the more you will ultimately get in benefits down the line, because every year Social Security is actually calculating your benefits.
Gotcha.
What they're going to be later in life.
And that's what gets us to that PIA primary insurance amount.
Yes. So how does Social Security calculate your benefits? Very briefly here, we don't want to go into too many details here.
Sure, because we've got that in the article.
What's happening here, Dan, is that the Social Security Administration gets a copy of your W-2. If you are working for an employer and they're taking out Social Security tax, a copy of your W-2 for the year is sent to the Social Security Administration office, wherever it is. There are a few offices around the country. The Social Security Administration, it has a copy of what is called, on your W-2, they see something called your Social Security wages. And what your, it's box three of your W-2. It says Social Security wages, and it shows the amount of tax taken out. And what Social Security is doing every year is they're looking at your 35 highest years of wages. Social Security wages. And every year they calculate what is called your primary insurance amount, the PIA. And the primary insurance amount is defined as the amount of your monthly benefit at your full retirement age in today's dollars. I want to emphasize, in today's dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I say that because somebody says to me, you know, Ed, I worked all these years, I've been working since, the mid 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm 65 years old now, and I'm going to call it quits. I think now that I'm 64 years old, I'm going to stop working. I got my 35 highest years. I probably maxed out my Social Security, and I think that's going to be about it. And I'm not going to, and it's useless for me to work anymore and get more benefits. That's totally false. That's a totally false assumption that you're not going to get any more. Because what Social Security is doing every year is they're looking at the 35 highest years. If that person would say, listen, I'm going to stop working in 2020, fine. But if they would work in 2021, then what they're going to earn in 2021 is probably a lot more than what they earned in 1986, which was 35 years ago. So Social Security is going to throw out the wages earned in 1986 and look at the 2020 wage, which means their primary insurance amount, as recalculated next year, will be more compared to if the person didn't work. Social Security benefits can only go in one direction, Dan, and that's up. One should never feel that they've capped out when it comes to Social Security. I always relate this story. I had a request from a gentleman He lived in he lives in Arizona. He works for the Indian Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
And he contacted, he got my name, he said, Mr. Zerndorfer, my father works for the VA in California, and he's 87 years old. He's still working. And he was born in, that time he was born in 1930, and my father always answered this question, why is it that I get these notices from Social Security in October every year saying, we've recomputed your benefits, and as a result of your still working, we're going to increase your benefits retroactive to the previous January. And all of a sudden, I see more money come. I'm getting more money every month. And I said to him, sir, the reason is because they're recomputing his benefits. He continues to work. They get a copy of his W-2, and they're going to recompute his benefits, and they're going to throw out the lower wages 35 years ago. When did your father start taking Social Security? When he was 65 in 1995. So he said, could you do this for me? I'll give you any information you need. Could you do the actual calculation? So I said, you send me all his information about his wages, and I'll calculate what I'll do exactly what Social Security does. And Dan, I did that, and every increase he got, I got to the penny. I calculated the benefits. This is no magic here. These are actual calculations.
Sure.
People should not feel they cap out when it comes to Social Security. The more they pay into the system, the more they're going to get.
Gotcha.
So, and also want to point out that Social Security indexes wages from past years. They index them to inflation, so you're not going to be losing anything if whatever you earned back in, let's say, in 1995 has been eroded by inflation, because Social Security will index those wages. It's
gotcha.
A fantastic system, Dan, and people should
appreciate
it.
I agree. And so as we opened with and you covered in the article, people can claim as early as 62, but that's going to be lower than FRA. But you also mentioned they might want to wait past their full retirement age. So what happens there?
I always say the Lord taketh away and the Lord giveth. I say that because if an individual reaches his or her full retirement age and says, you know, I really do not need to take Social Security now because I have enough retirement income, or maybe I'm still working. Many people are working longer now. They're working past full retirement age. So
sure.
Maybe I should not take my Social Security benefits and wait. And Social Security says, if you do that, then just like we take a portion of your benefits away, we reduce your benefits if you take it before full retirement age, we will increase your benefits if you delay the start of your Social Security. And what is the increase? For every year you wait past your full retirement age to start mm-hmm. receiving your Social Security will increase your benefits by 8% per year, up until age 70.
Mm-hmm.
May I please give you an example?
Sure.
Myself?
Yep.
I'm 69 years old now. I did not take Social Security 3 years ago when I became 66.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Because number one, I don't need it. Number two is I like to get more, so I feel that I, since I'm still working, because I'm self-employed, I can increase the benefit. But next January, that's it. That's they're not going to give me any more by waiting past that. So, God willing, you know, come next January, I'll apply for benefits, and my benefits will be 32% more compared to had I started for at age 66. It's a guaranteed increase.
And folks, again, in Ed's article, he's got some really good charts in there and some great examples for you to sort of read along with if you're listening to this, so it'll be a big help. Now, here we go, Ed, on page 6, and I'm gleefully rubbing my hands together for this one. Brother, you are tackling the question of the ages, and you take a really good swing at it. What's the best age for an individual to start receiving his or her Social Security benefit? Drum roll, please. What's the answer, Ed?
Okay, here we go. And here's my standard answer to everybody. I give you a definite, unqualified, no questions asked, it all depends. I hate to give you that answer.
No, I knew it was coming.
There is no one answer that fits everybody. There are several factors here. Let's go through some of the advantages of taking it early. Why would somebody want to take it before their full retirement age? Number one, they need the money.
Mm-hmm.
They need the money. Look at what's happening out now with the economy. Look what happened during the Great Recession 10 years ago. I remember this vividly. There were people who worked in private industry 10 years ago when the Great Recession came. They had no intention to start taking their Social Security until their full retirement age. Let's say they were 62, 63. But then the Great Recession came. Let's turn back the clock a few months with the COVID-19 pandemic. People lost their job. They needed money. They had to pay their bills,
sure.
People in their 60s. They had no other choice. They had to start taking their Social Security in order to pay their bills. So
gotcha.
that's one possibility. Another possibility is why somebody will want to take it earlier. I'm going to give you two other possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is not of good health.
Sure.
This is where the actuaries really come into play here. And there have been a lot of studies on this. And the question is, if somebody were to start taking Social Security at age 62, getting the reduced benefit, but start receiving the money, how long would they have to live to make it worthwhile, actuarially, to start taking early compared to waiting until their full retirement age and getting the full benefit with no reduction?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is generally about 12 years. In other words, I'll give an example, and I think I have the example there is on page 6 of the article talks about somebody whose full retirement age is age 66, and they're starting to take it at age 62. If this individual started taking it at age 62, and if they live beyond age 78, they made the wrong decision. If they die before age 78, they made the right decision. Again, what it means is if the person's really sickly at age 62, 63, they really should be serious about taking Social Security.
Sure.
Another consideration, and I guess we'll talk about this a little bit later, are family benefits.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about this in a few moments. Let's say an individual started having a family later in life. They got married. Let's say in their mid to late 40s, and they had children late in life. And here they reach the age of 62, and they have a couple teenagers. One teenager is 15 years old. And the other teenager is 13 years old. And the individual, the parent, is trying to decide, should I take my Social Security now at age 62, or should I wait till full retirement age? Let's assume the parent is still in good health. Well, the parent, I'll give you just some round numbers here. If the parent would take Social Security at age 62, would get $1,200 a month. If they took it at age 60, at their full retirement age, 66, they get $1,600 a month. There's a 25% reduction for taking it at 62. However, and we'll talk about this later, if someone is taking Social Security retirement benefit and they have children at home, young children,
mm-hmm.
under the age of 18, whatever the parent is getting, the children will get 50% of that benefit. So my example here, if the parent is getting a benefit at age 62 of $1,200 a month, then each child will get $600 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And the question comes up, what should the children do with that money? Well, I think what happens at age 18, does the child go to college? They could put that $600 a month into a college savings fund. But the parent says, I don't like that $400 reduction. I think I better wait till 66 and get my $1,600 a month. Well, if the parent is not getting the Social Security check, the child's not going to get this, the children not going to get the Social Security check. So
if
the parent is now 66, getting $1,600 a month, yes, each child would get $800 a month. But the 15-year-old now is now, 4 years later, 19 years old, is now ineligible for the check. And the 13-year-old is 17 years old. Only 1 year will that child get the check, because once he or she turns 18, the check will stop. So this is another possible scenario where somebody may want to take it earlier. But I do want to say this. I forgot if I covered this in the article. That if someone is younger than full retirement age, and they're still working, they should absolutely not take Social Security. And the reason is Social Security has a rule. If you're under your full retirement age and you're working, you have a job, you have earned income, or maybe you're self-employed, you have self-employment income, and if you earn too much money and you're receiving Social Security benefits, Social Security says you can only earn a certain amount of money each year, salary-wise, without losing any of your benefits. In this year, in 2020, someone who's younger than full retirement age, and I can tell you who those people are, somebody born in 1955, somebody born in 1956, sorry, Dan.
I know.
Somebody born in 1957 or somebody born in 1958. All the individuals I mentioned were born or are between 62 and their full retirement age this year in 2020. The most they can earn without losing any of their Social Security benefits, if they're taking them, is $18,240. For every $2 these individuals would earn above $18,240, Social Security will take back $1 of their benefits. Let's face it, Dan. $18,240 is not a lot of money.
I agree.
So what's the use of taking your Social Security if you're still working? Now, once you reach full retirement age, don't get me wrong, there's no more earnings tests. At that point, you can earn as much as you want and take Social Security the month you turn full retirement age. But these are some of the considerations that have to go into, should I take my Social Security before my full retirement age, or should I wait at least to my full retirement age?
Sure. Okay. And, you know, Ed, you mentioned the family side of things, and I think we're going to maybe leapfrog on that a little bit because it bridges together better. Folks, what I'll ask you to do is make sure you go to Ed's article, because he sort of rounds this one out with, obviously, as he said here, there's no one right answer to this. And the one piece of information that I'll share, and one thought that I'll share, is make sure if you're going to discuss this with somebody, it's somebody who really knows the system and knows what they're doing. This is not the time to talk to your buddy who you think knows what's going on. Now, he may. At one point in time, Ed was that buddy in the office. So if you've got a bona fide Ed Zerdorfer in your office, by all means, have a conversation with him. But if you don't, seek out quality advice. So he closes the article with a couple of points to consider that talk about the COLAs built in, talk about that there's a windfall elimination provision that CSRS folks will run into, and also what happens, and it's a good thing, if people keep working and paying into the system. Ed touched on that already with the gentleman whose dad was still working and still increasing it. So let's keep rolling right into the benefits. And again, you'll find for families, and you'll find all of this at blog.swserve.com and also fed-zone.com. So Ed, let's jump into the spousal benefits, because, you know, a lot of folks coming off of this are going to be saying, well, gee, I'm married. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. So individual, let's say, is married or was married. I want to mention that also.
Yep.
Because an individual can actually receive their former spouse's Social Security benefit under certain conditions. We can talk about that. You know, talk a little bit about that. But let's talk about married individuals in general. So, if a person is married and they've been married to someone, let's say for at least a year, we'll start from there. and let's say they're both of full retirement age. We have, let's say, husband A, we have wife, let's say, wife B. They both have been working. Let's say one spouse's benefits is, let's say, is the higher benefit and the other one's the lower benefit. And for mm-hmm. sake of argument, let's just use the husband. Husband has the higher benefit and the wife has the lower benefit for various reasons. Maybe the wife would stay at home for a while, for many years, taking care of the kids, started a little bit later in life, going, you know, working. So the husband's working consistently and has the higher benefit. Mm-hmm. So let's say the husband claims his benefit first, and now the wife is eligible to start claiming her benefits. She's at least age 62, and the husband's already receiving his. And they run some numbers here. And it turns out that half of husband's benefit is more than wife's own benefit. Repeat, mm-hmm. half of husband's benefit is more than wife's own benefit, her own benefit. Well, in that case, wife B can claim half of husband's Social Security rather than mm-hmm. taking her own, because it's more. This is called the dual entitlement law, mm-hmm. law. Okay? Now, there have been changes over the years about this. We're going to talk about, you know, what has happened most recently about this. So I'm talking very generally here because these are just some, this is just a very general scenario, because this is not always the case where their benefits might be about the same, and maybe one is older than the other. What happens then? Suppose one spouse suppose the higher earning spouse is not actually receiving it. What happens then? What happens in the case of an ex-spouse, a former spouse? Can you claim on a former spouse's if he or she is not claiming? These are some of the complications here. So we're talking very, very, very generally here. So these are called spousal benefits or ex-spousal benefits. Mm-hmm. And there are some rules regarding who is considered, you know, what a spouse is. We should really talk about that, what a spouse is, and I get into that in the article. If we can start talking about the definition of what a spouse is, because there have been some changes over the years regarding sure. the definition of a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead. Let's just talk about the Social Security definition of a spouse. To be considered a married couple for Social Security purposes, an individual and his spouse must meet one of the following conditions at the time they apply for benefits. An individual is married, has to be legitimately under state law married to the spouse. And by the way, this does include common law marriages in a state that recognizes common law marriages. There are a handful of states that recognize common law marriages, so if the state does and the person lives in that state, Social Security will recognize that marriage. This is a little bit interesting. The person who's applying for benefits has marital status with respect to the taking of intestate personal property. This is where the estate lawyers, I guess, get involved. And this is a big change that has happened within the past 5 years. If you're married to a same-sex spouse, you qualify for spousal benefits. This was not the case before the Supreme Court decision overturning the Defense of Marriage Act. Before June 26, 2015, if you were married to a same-sex spouse in a state that recognized same-sex marriages, you could not apply for half of your spouse's benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been a major change over the past couple of years.
Sure.
The spouse who's applying for the benefit, we're talking about the spouse of a fully insured individual. The spouse must have been married to that person for at least 1 year. One continuous year, or if that was not the case, the spouse was the natural parent of the individual's biological. In other words, if you were married to someone for less than a year, but that the person you're marrying is the actual parent of a child, then even though you weren't married for a year, you would qualify for their half of their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
When the spouse is applying for their half of the other spouse's benefit, it has to be at least age 62 or older. Or, and this is interesting, suppose the spouse is younger. And caring for a child who's younger than age 16. So, give you an example. We have a parent who is, let's say, 66 years old and married a much younger spouse.
Yep.
Say the spouse is 55, and there is a child who is 14 years old.
Yep.
The parent who's 66 is drawing Social Security. The child is 14 years old. The child is eligible for half of the parent's Social Security. Remember, we talked about earlier that a child younger than 18 can get half the parent's Social Security. And the child's mother can also get half of her husband's Social Security because she's taking care of the child, even though she's not 62. And of course, and this is where some people trip up, the spouse has to apply for the benefit. Now, people say, what do you mean by that, has to apply for the benefit? I always say, Dan, that the Social Security Administration knows nothing about your family. They have no idea. They don't take surveys. They don't knock on doors. They don't go online saying, can you tell us about your family? So in my example here, where the husband's 60 years old, he applied for his benefit. They're not going to ask them, well, do you have a spouse who's taking care of a child younger than 16? They're not going to ask them that.
Right.
The family has to know about it. So
as you were
mentioning earlier, this is the type of information that individuals should ask their advisors about all their benefits. We're so happy to provide this information via FedZone, because, again, fewer and fewer people are aware of this, and they're depending on somebody to help them get this information. And I also want to point out that if people find out about it, I didn't know I was entitled to those benefits. Can the benefits be reinstated retroactively?
No.
Only up to 6 months.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's a little bit upsetting when people find out years later they could have gotten all these benefits and now it's too late to apply for them because it's beyond 6 months. So, again, education is the key here, ladies and gentlemen. Being aware of the benefits.
Absolutely. And we'll be bringing some of this stuff virtually too, won't we, Ed? That's going to be part of our
absolutely
virtual outreach.
Absolutely.
And so stay tuned for that. So to kind of wrap things up in this, you gave some examples here where benefits might not be payable or might be reduced. So let's go through them fairly quickly because you gave seven. Again, folks, please go back and grab Ed's article and read it. You know, number one makes sense if spouse, and for ease of understanding here, spouse B is always going to be the spouse that's claiming. Spouse A is the one that was earning the benefit. And so if spouse A hasn't claimed yet, spouse B can't claim. So that makes sense. And if spouse, and in number two, if spouse A is claiming before full retirement age and is making more than the exempt amount, two things could happen. That benefit's either going to be lower, which would affect the spouse too, or they could earn so much they don't get it at all, and it just sort of kicks down the road until they get to the full retirement age, correct?
That's right. Back to the example here, we were talking about earlier, the child. So if spouse A is under full retirement age and receiving a benefit and earns too much money, Spouse A is going to lose his or her benefit. If the spouse B is drawing on half of spouse A's, they're going to lose the benefit, and so will the child. The earnings test applies applies to all these individuals. They're going to lose their benefits.
And then, you know, we'll let folks get to the article to get the rest of those, because some of them are pretty specific, you know, if there's somebody who's working outside the U.S. and that sort of thing. And you note that there's, you know, there the ways that the spousal benefit can end, obviously, if spouse B, the one who claimed, dies, okay? If spouse A dies, then spouse B might be entitled to widow-widower benefit.
That's correct.
If spouse B is under age 62 and there's no longer a child under age 16, that also makes sense based on what you covered. And then spouse B becomes entitled to his or her own retirement benefit. So let's round this out with what you did relative, touch quickly on the kids' benefits. You covered a whole lot of that. And so, you know, the kids are able to claim based on certain circumstances. You know, the amount is going to be that 50% number. And then the child, those benefits could terminate when the child dies, when the child turns 18 and is neither disabled nor a full-time student, the child marries, or the child is no longer entitled, or the child's parent is no longer entitled. Now, let's talk on the full-time student part. So if the child's 18 and a full-time student, what is the end date for that person?
When they're full-time student in high, and we're talking about post, let's say full-time elementary or secondary school. Once they age 19, that's it. But if they're still in school, age 19.
Okay.
But if the child was disabled, by the way, it does not end. Okay, it does not end as long as the disability was before the child was age 22. But to answer your question, Dan, if they're still in elementary, full time, or secondary school at age 18, once they reach 19, then the benefit will stop.
Okay, and you also mentioned to close out the article, there's a maximum family benefit that is determined by Social Security and depends on the number of family members that are eligible.
That is correct.
Once again, great stuff, and we'll be doing more on this. You'll have Ed's articles. Ed is rewriting a phenomenal manual for us that's going to be in the FedZone Ed Vault that you know folks will be able to access. So be sure to catch the next podcast because we're still on Social Security, and Ed's going to dive deep into the options and strategies because that's, you know, that's why we're just giving one section just to that. We went a little long in this one, but we wanted to make sure that second one is about options and strategies because there's so many misconceptions about that. So be sure to listen to that. Ed will be back as we continue to work together, reach, teach, and serve you. Right, Ed? You're going to stay with us?
Absolutely.
And we are serving those to serve. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on our YouTube channel and remember to share it with your friends and strangers. We're also on Spotify. Seriously, share it. It makes a big difference for folks. Check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. Don't forget our virtual seminars that are now going to be happening every month. Those will be going live in the next 2 weeks. You do not want to miss that because Ed Live is awesome. Ed coming to you in the safety and convenience of your home is just amazing. Be sure to read Ed every month in the Fed Zone at blog.swserve.com and also at fed-zone.com. And for me, Dan Sipe, the crew at Serving Those Who Serve, and Ed Zerndorfer, Godspeed. And above all, remember, it's your Fed life. Make it a great one because you deserve it. And please stay safe and well, everybody. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving those who serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.
Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James financial advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.
Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations.